because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is a special edition of Rewind. The last Rewind of the year, we want to talk about winners, maybe a few losers, some wild cards, and make a few predictions. You ready, JR?
Absolutely.
Go right into it. Okay. Winner, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. Why?
The perception for last pre-2015 had been that since Republicans took over the legislature and Governor Walker came to power, that the Assembly drove the train in the legislature, right? It was those guys who did all these great conservative things, and the Senate was where these things went to die. Scott Fitzgerald flipped that narrative on its head starting last November, actually, with Right to Work,
saying we're
going to take it up.
Yep.
And then as you watch the session progress, he was the one getting all these accolades from conservative media for driving the train, if you will, on these conservative priorities, and it was the Assembly that was the one that was kind of like holding things up or trying to be more moderate or watering things down. Now, some of that may be Robin Voss trying to protect some vulnerable members, because at 63 members, he's got seats he shouldn't have in the legislature right now.
Yeah.
So Fitz, though, is a different dynamic, too. He's got 19 members, but he has this kind of yin and yang where if you push the balloon one side, you lose air over here and vice versa. So he has to kind of manage his caucus in a way that you let them kind of stew a bit and kind of like they sift like sand and get to the spot with all together. Okay, we got 17 votes. Let's go.
Well, okay. Is one reason that he's a winner is because he's now working with more like-minded true conservatives, Kapinga, Strobel, and Nass?
Well, was
his job easier this year?
A little bit, but not necessarily terribly easier, because remember, he's still got Coles, Harsdorff, Petrosky, Moulton, Olson, who like to go their own way on things. I mean, they tried on, for example, the campaign finance bill to change stuff. Coles voted against the GAB bill, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he did. He was the only one.
So you still got that moderate streak, what's going on. But at times, they don't have Mike Ellis anymore. And Mike Ellis, love him or hate him, Mike Ellis loved the art of the deal and the negotiation. So Mike would get the nitty-gritty of things, and he would take the slings and arrows from conservative media over whatever, and he didn't care. And it helped these guys coalesce behind an idea to try to moderate things. Now he's gone, a little bit harder to do for that wing of the caucus, but it's part of it, get a little more stronger conservatives. But, think about who'd Strobel replace, Glenn Grothman. He wasn't exactly a wilting flower, if you will.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, next winner, Chief Justice Pat Rogenczak. I'll go first. Here was someone that was not extremely well known. I mean, she obviously led the conservative faction.
Mm-hmm.
The voters in April give the justices the right to name the Chief Justice. She didn't hesitate. She provided the fourth vote to elect herself.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I'm hearing now, 6 months later, she gave the State of the Judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
She went out of her way to praise Shirley's 19 years.
Yes.
And so I'm hearing that the court, now that you have Justice Bradley, who we'll get to later on, is actually starting to come together a little bit. Are you hearing the same things?
Well, the dynamic has changed because you had Abramson as the Chief Justice, who was running the administrative things, but you had Rogenczak as the de facto Chief Justice, who had the conservative majority, if you will, and could, on most issues, they stuck together and were the 4-3 or 5-2 majority on decisions. So when you had votes on policy, they ruled the day. So all you had was Abramson holding on to this lever of power, if you will, of dictating the agenda. They were still running the show, if you will, in terms of what ultimately happened. Now that Shirley's hands are off that lever, they have nobody really as a impediment to what they want to do. It makes things run smoother just because of that. And
yes.
Now Shirley has a choice. Does she want to try to be a fly in the ointment all the time or try to get along with it? It's kind of a little bit of that dynamic, if you will.
Okay, so what we're saying is that Chief Justice Rogenczak is on our winner's list because there's less animus in the court.
Well, she became Chief Justice. That's a nice thing to put on your resume. She, like you said, had that kind of title in some ways because she ran
de facto,
the majority.
Yeah.
Now she has it officially. It's a different court than it was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Okay, next winner, U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan. What an amazing year he's had.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be Ways and Means. I'll get that, and I'm going to sit back. Oh, Speaker Boehner's going to resign? No, I don't want that. Oh, am I the only one? Now he passes transportation, and he's got a new education bill. So But going back to what I said on Friday, I mean, the average U.S. House Speaker since the 1970s lasted 5 years. So still in the honeymoon. Your take?
A year ago, we were talking about, will Paul Ryan run for president? Yeah. And that was the question. And when I did a story about this almost a year ago, a little more on that, the answer was he doesn't need the job. He wants to be Ways and Means Chair. That's where he's going to be most effective. And the perception was he'd go be Ways and Means Chair for 6 years. That's the maximum you're allowed under House rules. Retire from Congress, go do some think tank thing, do something else, and then if you wanted to run for president down the road, because he had that opportunity, if you will. Plus, you had the Scott Walker factor, and that Walker was likely going to run, so you didn't want to lose a butt of hands. Then the year progressed, and Boehner, like the animosity of that caucus just kind of tore it apart.
Oh, boy.
Boehner kind of took all the arrows. He went away. McCarthy was supposed to be the speaker in waiting, was supposed to come forward and lead the caucus. He bungled that badly. And a couple missteps, verbal missteps right away that did him in. And then it was Paul Ryan was a savior.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want it, but I will take it. But here's my vision for being speaker.
And now the question is, how long does he want to be speaker? He was on Meet the Press over the weekend. He said, he was asked, do you want to be speaker beyond 2016? He said, I don't know, but I'm having more fun than I thought I would. Because there are all these dynamics. What if we have a Republican president? What if there's a Democratic president? How, does that change the dynamic, if you will, for Paul Ryan as Speaker? And what does he want to do? Does he see a future as Speaker that there's a long-term goal for him? Or does he go, you know, I've had enough of this and I'm going to go off to something else? And oh, by the way, running for president when you've been Speaker, not the best platform, so maybe that door's closed
but
for him now?
How does he walk the fine line with not endorsing Donald Trump, on one, not endorsing Donald Trump and not saying he wouldn't support Donald Trump if he was a nominee?
I've talked to a couple operas about this, and their theory is that for Republicans like Paul Ryan, like a Scott Walker, if you go after Donald Trump directly, it'll infuriate the Donald, and he will almost assuredly say, well, if things aren't going my way, I have an out now to say I'm going to run for independent for president. And that would certainly sink the Republicans next fall in the presidential race. So you have to find a way to kind of like engage him without really kind of going after him, you know, head on, if you will.
Yeah.
The other thing about Ryan is he's got this honeymoon period in part because John Boehner took some, clean up the barn, they called it, right before he left, did a couple of bills real quick to get these things out the door, paved the way. If you look at the votes on the spending package and tax package last week, they still got a majority of Republicans, or a good number of Republicans, I should say, voting for both bills. There's still some grumbling, if you will, about how much they spent if they were paid for those things. But for the most part, he's got a bit of a honeymoon window where they're going, okay, the regular order is being restored. At least I have my say. I get my chance to talk about it, read the entire bill before we vote. I, as a Republican, feel better about how the House is operating.
And there was no government shutdown. Mm-hmm. But the New York Times story says that budget package worsens the federal deficit.
And Ryan's argument is that these taxes were tax cuts were renewed every year. That extending them permanently is not a tax cut. It's a tax maintenance. That's his argument for what it's worth. But, yeah, you know, it is going to be harder to kind of govern, if you will, depending on the dynamics of the next going for the next 12 months.
Yeah, we agree. Okay, next winner, Republican Representative John Nygren, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. Let me go first. He was able to get the $850 million borrowed for roads. Mm-hmm. He's also continued to say, I want to be a part of fighting heroin addiction. I've got this tragedy with Cassie, who I talked to him about last week. She's living in Green Bay, working as a waitress, and he hopes doing well. So any PSs on Nygren?
Well, interesting that if you go back to the actual budget process, Nygren and Darling were kind of fighting governor. It was like this weird kind of fight about bonding for transportation, right? $1.3 billion was too much. So where did they end up? And then there was this, remember Robin Voss with the no bonding idea, and Scott Walker said, go ahead. We'll see what happens. In the end, they found this like middle road to try and appease everybody. Mm-hmm. But Senator Republicans weren't going to go for that 350. That was not part of their agenda. He got the Democrats to go for it, keep his caucus together, and move forward and got it knocked out. So, and the dynamic was Senate Republicans got their projects funded. You know, the zoo was a big one for all those guys. Yes, there's some outside Republicans in the caucus who want their projects funded, but a lot of it's based in southeastern Wisconsin where you got the zoo and those kinds of things. The assembly members, though, they're more outstate. They're going, I want my Highway 20. I want my X, Y, and Z done. So for the 23, I should say. So for them, it was more important to get that bonding done to keep their projects moving forward and have the zoo suck up everything else.
But you and I, in our years covering the Capitol, we've seen a lot of joint finance chairs. My position is that Nygren has really grown into the job of mm-hmm. co-finance chair.
And now Darling's going to run for election. You assume she would come back, so they will probably be in charge again next budget cycle and have the same debate about funding for roads.
Oh, come on. We have to come up with a solution for roads. Okay. Another winner, Republican Representative Dean Knutson. And here's I'll start the discussion this way. He ran for majority leader. He didn't get it. But, you know, he ended up in finance. He was a lead on GAB. I can almost argue that he's getting more passed as a member of finance than if he were majority leader.
Interesting thing about him on finance is he's also been sometimes likely to break with the party, if you will. That Weedick came up on finance. He said, I don't like this agency.
What about the Bucks?
I would just soon do away with it. Bucks, same thing. So it gives him a platform as well to kind of voice these, this is not good, but we're going to go along with it anyway kind of thing. So it's interesting to watch him do that.
Yeah, it is. Knutson's been pretty effective on finance. Next, next winner, Republican Senator Leah Vukmir. She was quiet on finance, but when it mattered, she kind of she won more fights than she lost. She also is now the Assistant Senate Majority Leader. She's a leader of ALEC nationally, whatever you think of ALEC. I'm not saying it's better or good. It's just out there.
Yeah.
So your thoughts on Leah?
Well, you add up right to our prevailing wage. Mm-hmm. She pushed that with the budget. She and Rob Hutton, they were up there late one night walking around talking to members, and there's a sudden push about whether they're going to put it in or not. That was going on. She eventually got it worked in the Senate budget in a fairly ingenious way by Scott Fitzgerald, where he had the votes to put prevailing wage into the budget, let Rick Gudeck off, but then had the votes to pass the budget without some other members, a different combination of 17, if you will,
right,
to get things done. So for him, interesting way to go. She's now pushing the repeal of minimum markup. That is not going to happen, I don't think, this session.
I agree with you. It's not going
to
happen.
I talked to Voss and Fitzgerald last week. They were not hot on the idea of pushing that in the brief window we have between January and maybe the 1st of March, 5th of March to go. But that's going to be an issue she'll push again next session, I would bet. So watch her. She's not going to be quiet about those things going forward.
And also, if Scott Fitzgerald got a chance to run for Congress or moved up, she might be the next majority leader. I mean, if the GOP keeps control. Okay, another winner, Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow. He opens a year as Assistant Senate Majority Leader. Mm-hmm. Then he runs for County Executive in April, stays around to vote for the budget. He no longer has to commute to Madison. He earns a lot more. Paul's had a pretty good year.
Now, the question for Paul is, what's the future? Now, Scott Walker rode the legislature to County Executive to governor path. Could Farrell recreate that? Now, there are a couple of issues for Farrell that are different. One, having a Republican in charge of Milwaukee County is much different than a Republican in charge of Waukesha County. Not as high profile, one. Number two, Walker had the county board as a foil, if you will, to kind of play, I'm a good government guy trying to cut spending and watch the taxpayer, whereas Farrell's got a board likely not more liberal than he is, if you will, or less conservative than he is. So there's not really that foil, you know, to play off of. And then three, what's the dynamic of a primary if there is one in 2018? Let's just say Governor Walker doesn't run just for that, for this
exercise. Now, you're assuming
exercise.
He does not run.
Just for this exercise. Okay.
Clayfish.
Clayfish is going to run.
Yeah.
Reed Ribble might run.
Yep.
Sean Duffy, where those two end up. One might run for Senate, one might run for governor. Does Farrell, where does he fit into that dynamic? And will there be a private sector person come forward and run as well? There are all these kind of questions, if you will, but there may be a springboard for him to something bigger from being county executive. And if not, he's making, what, twice, three times the salary?
Two and a half times the salary, right. And he doesn't have to commute to the Capitol. 2015 winner, Milwaukee Bucks. It still amazes me that this unholy alliance, Scott Walker, Chris Abley, Tom Barrett, came up with $250 million to pay. Well, it'll probably cost more because there's always overruns. Yeah. But
they had the team to pay for those, so.
Oh, yeah, the team has to pay for it, but the symmetry here, let's cut the UW by 250, and mm-hmm. Let's give 250 to the Bucks. So the Bucks were clear winners. You could say they rolled the legislature, but that probably overstates it.
Was fascinating in that you had Republicans and Democrats outstate voting for the Bucks, which I thought was interesting, especially when you go back to 2009, I think it was, you put $5 million in the budget for a Bucks scoreboard, and Democrats got killed for it in ads in 2010. Will there be ads next fall going after Tom Tiffany, for example, about his vote in the Bucks? To be determined. Now, while they got their financing, there are also these other issues for the Bucks, which, one, the record stinks right now. Two, they're supposed to break ground, right, and have this thing ready in 2017.
Yeah.
Well, now it's not going to happen. They're supposed to be up and running right now.
Right.
Now it's going to be out until spring. Now we're talking about 2018. And there are all these kind of delays. Almost immediately after the thing was signed, it was like, delay, 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 not quite what we thought it was. But also a winner, that's Milwaukee. I mean, you could have a billion-dollar investment in downtown Milwaukee from this entire thing.
Okay.
But
I'm still really surprised. 250 in public funds. Okay. Our last winner, school choice. It's now going statewide with no limits, with the exception no district can lose more than 1%.
And that goes 1% each year for 10 years. Yep. The entire cap goes off 10 years from now.
Yep. Are you surprised that the Jim Benners of the world, leader of school choice and Scott Jensen, are continuing to get their way in every budget?
No, I mean, it was interesting was the governor had a financing option or plan, if you will, for choice. It just did not work from day one for the choice advocates. You basically would have taken each kid, like their aid to the district, and put a pot of money, then divide up equally among the kids who get it. And that wouldn't have worked because you think about it, if you're from a district where you get a very small amount of aid,
right. It
wouldn't pay for your education at a private school. So. Yep. Republicans in the legislature reworked that funding formula to make it more palatable for the choice people. They also, by the way, found ways to try and eliminate the Milwaukee problem, the funding flaw they call it, where Milwaukee taxpayers are hit harder because of kids going to school. That's being eased out. They've addressed things for other districts as well, though districts still say we're losing money because this is going to hit us hard. But yes, the choice movement is alive and well. It's going to continue going forward. These guys have an ally and advocate in Scott Walker and Republicans in the legislature. I don't see an end, if you will, to the progress they've made unless Democrats take back control and say enough's enough, we're going back to whatever.
But even some Democrats are saying we're not going to end school choice in Milwaukee. But look at the progression. Okay, school choice started, 25 years ago in Milwaukee to Racine, then statewide a little bit, now statewide no limits. It's just... they continue to have great luck in the Capitol.
Well, they've got great funding. They've got deep pockets backing them. You know, I mean, the argument 25 years ago was if you force competition, the districts will get better. That did not happen in Milwaukee. So now we have the critics call it the Milwaukee Takeover Plan. The backers call it, basically something else. It's saving these schools, but you have that new plan for Milwaukee schools going through this past session.
Yeah.
What's going to happen with that? So now it's about choice, giving parents choice, empowering them. It's been a good message for them. It's worked.
Okay. Now let's turn to some losers. Number one loser, GAB Director Kevin Kennedy. I mean, here's somebody that has been assisting in running elections for 30 years. So, is he a loser because he overreached with John Doe? Because he says that was and the board members say that was a board decision to get involved in John Doe. But you heard the Republicans argue, no, you're a staff-driven rogue agency. Your thoughts on Kevin Kennedy?
It isn't just about the GAB. It goes back to, one, anytime you have somebody overseeing elections, you're going to have both sides unhappy with you. Go back to the recalls in 2011. There were problems then where people complained about Kevin Kennedy. Go back to the ballot issue last fall where the redesign was criticized by Republicans, though that lawsuit was dismissed fairly quickly by Republican or a conservative judge in conservative Waukesha County. If you look at it, part of it is the agency has not really won many friends, if you will, in the legislature. And at one of our luncheons last October, I think it was, Robin Voss first said, Kevin Kennedy has got to go. He became the personal, almost the face of the effort to get rid of the GAB because he became the target of the animosity, if you will. And if you go through these hearings, I remember Chris Capping asking about his relationship with Lois Lerner and have you no decency?
Have you no decency, he responded.
All these things where Republicans go, well, wait, you're talking to this IRS agent who we all think is, going after conservative groups. This is something we need to know about. And you look at the email traffic from the John Doe lawsuits that we've seen. There was clearly Shane Falk had an agenda, if you will, or was advocating a viewpoint in those emails about what was going on. And that's your staff. That becomes your responsibility.
Yeah, to have Shane Falk use that term sheeple.
Mm-hmm.
And to have Kevin either not stop that or be aware of it and not do damage control, Kevin has not had a good year.
And if you look at the GAB overall, the complaint has been that it's hard to get kind of clear guidance sometimes from them. Democrats, while they criticize the move from the GAB to these new commissions, you don't see any of them really kind of going to bat for Kevin Kennedy personally or really kind of laying out there, we have to stop that. You've made a lot of enemies. Part of it's not really, I don't say his fault, but the nature of the job, I guess you should say.
Absolutely.
That you're going to make a lot of enemies in your time doing it.
Yep. Okay. Another loser, Justice Shirley Abramson. She opened the year as Chief Justice. And I'm really surprised at, she said, okay, the voters rewrote the Constitution to elect the seven justices, to give the seven justices the power to pick the chief justice. She then said, I was elected as chief justice. So first she invoked this divine right to be chief justice for another 10 years. Then when she was deposed by the four conservatives, she sued, which I was surprised. It's not a property right to be chief justice. And then she withdrew the lawsuit. But she was chief justice for 19 years?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she ran a pretty tough ship. And
the thing is,
now one of seven.
This is what she had left, because the conservatives won the majority of the court, and she didn't have much sway over decisions anymore because she was in the minority. So being chief justice gave her an avenue to still direct the court kind of a little bit how she wanted it to go.
Yeah.
Although again,
scheduling,
those four conservatives still had, you know, in the end it was a vote on a conference.
Yep.
They kind of ruled the day. So that goes away. Justice Crooks passes away. Justice Bradley, Rebecca Bradley's appointed.
Yes.
Now a 5-2 sort of majority. Justice Abramson has one less friend, if you will, on the court, or ally on the court.
Yep.
Ann Walsh is the only one left. The lawsuit was kind of odd to some people. It wasn't going to be a winner for her long term. The question is, how much of an asterisk is this in her political obituary many moons from now, hopefully? And they write about Shirley Abramson, a long-serving chief justice of the Constitutional Court, blah, blah, blah. Where does it fit in? She was dropped in 2015 and sued. Is it a big part of the story or a small part? I mean, she's had a very distinguished legal career. I mean,
yes,
very distinguished.
Yeah.
And she'll be remembered as a trailblazer in Wisconsin for what she's done. At the same time, this will be part of the story, this lawsuit, and that she was, you know, dumped in 2015.
That's right. That's right. Next loser, the Scott Walker president campaign. I mean, the governor laid the groundwork to run. He said, I'm not going to run until I sign the budget. The budget was delayed by the transportation impasse. So he gets in July. He gets out in September. So we're not saying the governor is a loser, because he's still the governor of the state of Wisconsin. He's won three statewide elections. But his campaign was, some of these consultants, well, let me ask you, did they hire too many consultants, the payroll too high? And then when he didn't do well in the two debates, it just all went away and vanished?
I would argue, while this is the Walker campaign, I would argue that Walker is responsible for all of it. This is really his doing. He made the mistakes. He made the gaffes on the trail. He had the poor debate performances. Granted, his staff did not serve him well, but he hired those people. He should have had maybe a little bit closer to what was going on. If you look at how they, and let's be honest, Scott Walker's running for president from the day after the 2014 election was over.
I couldn't agree more.
And if you look at his calendars, he was gone a lot this year. So the budget delay was, as much as Republican leaders say, there was no impact from Governor Walker being gone. We talked just as much as we would before. In past budgets, him being gone was not good for the budget process. On a Friday night, I was in the joint finance room, and they were trying to wrap things up. Scott Walker was on a boat tour in New Hampshire, raising money for his judicial campaign. There was a disconnect there, if you will, yep, that played out. Then they went on a break for an entire month because he couldn't get a transportation agreement, in part because Scott Walker said, a fee increase or tax hike won't go over with me, because a fee increase, for the first time that I've heard in Wisconsin, is a tax increase to me. Now, there's no new revenue source for transportation. They have to go to the bonding process. It kicks the can down the road some more, which they promised they weren't going to do. All these things kind of go back to, where was his attention? What was he focused on? And how did he perform, if you will, with this? Look at his poll numbers. They reflect the decisions that he made and the campaign that he ran for president and being gone.
Is the fact that he only ran for president for 71 days, is that a fact that he doesn't have enough people in his kitchen cabinet?
Oh,
he hires these advisors to brief him. He hired the advisors to brief him on foreign policy. But when he has to make a key decision, how many people are in the room? He, Tanette, one other person, two other people?
There's a small circle that he relies on, that's for sure. But I don't know if it's that. Let's be honest with the governor. He has a chance to recover, if you will, from this.
Oh, I agree.
But the thing about Scott Walker was, he had a reputation before this presidential run that his backers were locked in. He was at 48, 47% almost every Marquette poll. Even when things were going badly, he might drop to 45, but he was locked in there. He also had a locked in 42 to 44% that did not like him at all. Very polarizing figure. Can he win back those moderates? I don't know if he can. He's thinking about running in 2018. Maybe he can. Maybe he can recover in time. The Dems don't have a great candidate right now, so maybe you can even win against a weak candidate with bad poll numbers. But where's the vision? Where's the agenda for 2016 and beyond? That's the key question for Scott Walker to answer, is this is what I'm going to do. I'll get back on my feet and and prove I'm back in charge.
I agree. He's got enough time to win support back, but he's got to start with that state-to-state message next mm-hmm. month. Okay, next loser. Has anybody ever been fired more than Special Prosecutor Francis Schmitz?
That's a good question.
I mean, the Supreme Court says you were, by the way, they said it twice, you were appointed and your appointment is invalid. We're finally terminating you. Yeah, he wants to throw the ball down to the U.S. Supreme Court with an appeal. But Francis Schmitz.
Well, interesting that the first decision from the court in July about John Doe 2 said it was Prosser's concurring opinion that he believed that the appointment was invalid. But the court as a whole did not make that carry the weight of an order, if you will, that you have to be off. So when Schmitz went back to court and said, I want you to reconsider this decision because you want to go to the U.S. Supreme Court with it, they came back and said, we're not going to reconsider. And oh, by the way, we're taking Justice Prosser's concurring opinion,
yes,
making it the weight of the full court, saying your appointment is invalid. You only have limited duties left, which include largely returning the property that was seized during John Doe 2, and that's it. Now, Schmitz afterwards said, I'm still considering appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, which caught some people by surprise. Like, well, how can he do that if your appointment's invalid?
That's a standing issue. Does he have standing?
Yes. But good for those who want to see an appeal. John Chisholm, Ishmael Ozan, and the Iowa County DA said, we'll pick up the ball and run with it, if you will. Filed the motion late Friday to intervene. So now they can file the appeal to the Supreme Court if the state Supreme Court grants them that standing. They still have to do that, but there's an opportunity for them to do that.
But what about Schmitz's rather interesting remark that he was in the military and he was mm-hmm. fighting terrorists, and that didn't prepare him to go up against the likes of the Club for Growth?
He has not done anything to ingratiate himself, if you will, to conservatives in Wisconsin who think he has been on a crusade and is not bowing to reality in what he's been saying about this court. So, yes, a little bit rough ending for him of the year.
Okay. I also put on the list of losers, Assembly Democrats, because saying Wisconsin is open for corruption 1,212 times is not a visionary statement going forward. That's my opinion. What do you think?
I think the Dems, their kind of tail is still to be determined, especially with next year. They do have their 15 for 15 bills they've talked about, but they have to do a better job of communicating their vision to Chippewa Falls, to southwestern Wisconsin, to Wausau, these places where they should be doing better, but they're not.
Yep.
They do a great job in Madison, Milwaukee. They do a great job in the city of Green Bay and the city of Eau Claire. They're doing fine there. But until they connect with voters in those southwest, those more little more swing areas, they're not going to make any progress coming back. They did a better job recruiting candidates in 2014, but they still have this hurdle of they don't have the money. If you're a Democratic donor, where do you put your money? You can put it in the governor's race, the Senate races, or assembly races where you're at 36, so maybe you get to 40 or 42. Is that where you want to put your money, or do you want to take a two-cycle approach when you make control of the state Senate, saying I can put money in next fall in the Senate races, then hopefully 2018 is a good year for us, or you're up for 20 in the governor's race saying we need the governor's office in 2018. They're kind of a victim of circumstance, but yes, they need a better message going forward.
Okay, yeah. The issue is they're on my losers list because they haven't played offense very well, casting a vision and a reason mm-hmm. for them to come back. Loser, the UW system, because Walker opened the bidding at a $300 million cut. They took a $250 million, which goes beyond a haircut, over 2 years, and that's going to strain the UW system, so they're a loser this year.
They've been a perpetual loser with Republicans. They've seen nicks. Now, Republicans, let's be honest, they say,
look. Plus the fight over tenure, excuse me.
Republicans say, look, Jim Doyle whacked the heck out of those guys before, so don't blame us. And oh, by the way, we froze tuition to protect the students in this process to make them a more lean fighting machine. And oh, you had this had a billion dollar slush fund, in the Republican words. You can dip in that money if you want to and come back to us after that and figure things out.
Yeah.
So, but there's tenure, shared governance. It is a different system now than it was before Republicans took over. And they were spared, though, the authority model that Governor Walker wanted to do. Now, there are some people like UW Madison would probably like that model because they can have more freedom. They have more of a flagship, if you will, presence. But for the smaller campuses,
$1 billion in research coming in,
a much different dynamic for them to do that. So, you know, but yes, it's a little different environment, if you will, for them.
Okay. Final loser, labor unions, right to work, prevailing wage. When you stack that up against Act 10, man.
You've seen a gradual erosion, if you will, of the power of unions for the last, going back to Act 10, you know, and there's less money. There are fewer people.
The three Aspen councils are now one. Go ahead, excuse me.
Remember, when I first started covering elections in Wisconsin, it was a race between WMC and WEAC. They were both the big 800-pound gorillas duking it out in all these assembly and Senate races. Now there's WMC and all these conservative groups and Greater Wisconsin. I mean, there's not the same dynamic in terms of resources. Now, the unions can have their national folks, you know, feed them money for elections, but it's just not the same as it used to be.
Right. Maybe we should have listed WMC as one of our winners. Anyway, okay, now let's talk about wild cards. People that are going to be fun to watch in 2016. My first nominee is Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, he of the white hat riding on the horse, because in some ways he is, I think, Wisconsin's version of Donald Trump because of some of the things that he says.
Well,
he want to be next?
That's a good question. He doesn't want to be mayor. He said on a talk show about 3 weeks ago he's not going to run for mayor next year. That he's got other interests, but running for office is not one of them. He's become the, like, go-to guy for conservative media to get an African-American viewpoint on crime or issues in the black community. He has definitely got a national following thanks to Fox News. Now, if you talk to conservatives in Milwaukee, they think he could have beaten Mayor Barrett. I talk to Democrats in Milwaukee, say, not a chance. He's just said too many things that could be used against him. So we'll never know, if you will, what could have been. But what does he want to do next? I mean, that's a big question for him. What's his audience going to be? What's his niche going to be? I don't know we can win a congressional seat as a Democrat. It's a much different race than running for sheriff. I don't know what his base is going to be. So that's a kind of to be determined, if you will.
Yeah. He's going to be so much fun to watch. 2015 wildcard Democrat Russ Feingold coming back with a grudge match against Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. But here's why he's a wild card, because his campaign finance rules have to change in terms of third party. He can no longer, and go back to McCain-Feingold. Mm-hmm. How'd that work out for the world, okay? And then you have Citizens United. So he can't run the races that he ran for three campaigns. He's got to do things much differently. And I have a question whether he's there yet. And on top of this.
Well, he's in very good position in the polls, in part because Ron Johnson's not well known. Now, Russ Feingold has several hurdles overcome. One, can Republicans define him as somebody who has changed? They did to Tommy Thompson back in 2012. Now, that's a different story, though, a bit with Tommy, because Tommy left and cashed in, if you will. Mm-hmm. Right? He went out, got a bunch of boards, made a lot of money. It's a much different scenario than with Feingold, where it's, well, he was a campaign finance reformer. He created this pack, essentially, that, you know, paid his employee. Is that a harder argument to make about campaign finance rules versus, or what do you have the pack, versus this guy, you know, went out and got a bunch of corporate boards and cashed out. There's that. Foreign policy.
Yep.
You know, Feingold has not apologized or backed away from his vote for against the Patriot Act back in 2001, I think it was, and says, I'm still proud of that vote. Will that be an issue? Will terror be an issue on the plate next year that really defines that race? With Johnson, he's not well known. I mean, he's been in office for 5 years now, and he's still not well known. His poll numbers are not good. Now, some will argue because he's not well known, there's a chance to improve his numbers. Others will argue, look, he's had 5 years. If he's not well-known, it's because they're not going to go toward him. They can go away from him. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. So we'll see. I don't know how they change those dynamics, though, where Johnson's get better known in the next 10 months for that race to really get him being a position to win.
Well, what does Feingold say about a third-party spending? Is he going to welcome it now?
I don't know. That's good. I'm curious to see how things progress, if you will.
Okay. Okay. Another wild card, Justice Rebecca Bradley. This is intriguing. Walker put her on the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, put her on the Court of Appeals, then puts her on the Supreme Court. So she has got to figure out how to run a statewide race. So that's why I think she's a wild card.
Well, she will have the advantages of the WMC machine, if you will. They've already made clear they support her and back her. Conservatives have largely had a good run in Supreme Court races lately, other than Ann Walsh Bradley and Justice Abramson. They've won everything for the past decade, if I remember correctly, count my years off the top of my head. So she has that advantage. Progressives, Democrats, looking at going, okay, she is the Walker appointee. Walker's numbers stink. Can they tie her to Walker, make her seem like a partisan, if you will,
right,
and make us seem like the nonpartisan? Because people, I think the ideal with a voter in Wisconsin is for a nonpartisan judge. Can you make her seem partisan, if you will, going that race next year?
And it was intriguing. The Republican Party is doing what to help Bradley, Justice Bradley?
Gather signatures, which, you know, they've helped people before. That's not unusual. But it pulls with a veneer of a nonpartisan race. Let's be honest. Democrats and progressive groups, they'll get behind either Kloppenberg or Joe Donald, or if Claude Cavelli wins, they'll get behind the opponent for Brussels Bradley. There's no two ways about it. But it's not quite as overt as the war collecting signatures for.
Well, if Court of Appeals Justice Judge Kloppenberg is a nominee, are we going to see a rerun of Kloppenberg versus Prosser?
Good question. I'm sure WFC has his old ads about Kloppenberg from 2011 that you can dust off and freshen up a bit.
So. Fascinating. Okay. Next wild card, Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley. What is this? He wants to know the email contacts of Democratic senators? What's up with that? Well, first of all, he's running ads in Milwaukee. He's well-funded. He's playing some heavy-duty offense against Chris Larson. Chris Larson just lost his campaign manager. So do you think it looks pretty good for Chris Abley to get reelected right now?
Let's back up. He got a Bucks deal done.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that good year, good part of his year for that. He was a willing friend, if you will, or partner with Republicans on that deal. He has a reputation for being socially liberal, but fiscally more moderate. I mean, some little conservative on some things. That's kind of interesting to watch. The thing about that Abley-Larson race is, one, Abley has a lot of money. Larson doesn't. I think Larson's announcement when he's going to run said, I have the smallest house on the block. He has the nicest house in Milwaukee, essentially. That's our dynamic. So Abley will self-fund. Can Larson find enough progressive groups and union groups to back his campaign to fight to a draw or even come or even the same neighborhood or ballpark, if you will, what Abel is financially. Abel on the air now, you can see a couple things. One, he's got a lot of money to spend, so why not? Two, it's going to be cluttered in the airwaves come March and April in Milwaukee because you have presidential primaries, mayor's race, what else could be out there? He's getting out there early.
Supreme Court race.
Supreme Court, thank you. He's getting out there early and burning some images in, if you will, because even his backers will tell you, while Abel in their minds has done good things for Milwaukee County, he has not done a good job of selling those things and burning them in for the public about what he's done.
But
he needs to find himself better.
And Abley also has some natural foils. We've mentioned one of them, David Clark.
Yeah.
And the second one is the Milwaukee County Board.
Yeah.
Boy, do they go back and forth. So he can cast them as, you know, the enemies of his progressives.
And with Abley, he says he's not going to run for governor in 2018, but might a reelection change his mind? What if there's nobody else in late 2017 stepping up to the plate? Might that, you know, push him? Who knows? But that's a wild card for Abley down the line. Of what happens this spring could be a big part of the future for him in Wisconsin.
And our final wild card, Republican National Chairman Reince Priebus out of Kenosha. Mm. Boy, how does he land this plane to win this, to win in November, with given the Trump and all this back and forth? I mean, I just think he's got a heck of a problem.
Well, if you remember, after 2012, the autopsy of what happened. And one of the big things was appeal to Hispanics. I don't think Mr. Trump is helping the Republican Party nationally help appeal to Hispanics.
And Cruz versus Rubio is not helping either.
Well, Rubio, interesting, if you look at some polls, that there's an opportunity, if you will, for Republicans, if a Rubio is the nominee, to make a better appeal than a Trump would, obviously. Priebus also that autopsy called for a condensing of the window for these primaries and new rules to have a shorter process so they could spend general election money earlier and get their nominee off and running, because they felt like in 2012 that Romney couldn't spend general election money until after the convention in August. It handicapped him in going forward to November, that they need to compress this window. Well, now we're talking about a brokered convention. What if nobody gets to 50%? What do we do then? It may actually exacerbate the situation and contribute to a crazier ending of the ride, if you will, come now. That's all now. We're sitting here, whatever, late December talking about this. A couple early wins by somebody in Iowa, New Hampshire, South, could change the
charge. Momentum, yeah.
So, but if you get a Cruz win in Iowa, a Christie win in New Hampshire, or whomever in New Hampshire, then you go back, you have four different winners in four states.
And it flips to South Carolina.
And Trump does well there. Now you're talking like a total, okay, Katie bar the door kind of thing. So we'll see.
Brokered convention? I don't think so. But if it's a brokered convention.
I want to go.
Yeah, and you want to go. And Reince is at the table. Okay, a few predictions for 2016. We're winding up our show. When you look at the stats, the turnout on Democrats in presidential years can be as high as 20% more than in off years. So I'm predicting state Senate Democrats pick up one, a 15th seat. I'm not willing to say two, and Assembly Democrats pick up 3 to 4. You want to make one prediction?
I will say that the presidential primaries in Wisconsin, depending on how what's going on with those, will dictate what happens in the state Supreme Court race, that either side could run the perfect race and still be overcome by the presidential primaries. If there is a Republican primary going on, it's hard for a Democrat to win or a progressive candidate to win a Supreme Court race if there's not a Democratic primary going on as well.
Okay.
If both are happening, different ballgame. But if one's and not the other, that could dictate the race, no matter what it's going on from the candidates.
I'm also fascinated by a prediction. This bill that just came out of an assembly committee unanimously, giving counties who pass a referendum the right to raise a half-cent sales tax for their highways, bridges, local projects. My prediction, that passes the assembly and then runs into tremendous problems in the Senate, where you have the Senator Nass, Senator Strobel, Senator Kapinga. How do you feel about that bill?
I talked to Fitzgerald about it last week, and he didn't have any interest in it.
But that's in December. Mm-hmm. Wait till it gets, 70 votes in the assembly. That's very intriguing. Okay, it's your turn for a prediction.
Barring a cratering by either candidate, either presidential level or the Senate level, whatever happens in the presidential race, will be the winner of that election in Wisconsin, that probably won the Senate seat as well. I mean, we've lost our reputation as a split-ticket voting state. The last person that I can remember to do it statewide was Russ Feingold in 98 when Tommy won, and Russ won by the skin of his teeth. Go back and look. Otherwise, it has not been, you don't see a swing where you have a Democrat winning the Senate race and a Republican winning the governor's race or whatever. It's gone away. And we're a very polarized state. Things are locked in. They're both very good at getting their bases out. So whatever happens for president probably dictates what happens in the Senate race.
Final subject I want to bring up, and I don't have enough confidence in it to make it a prediction. If a Republican is elected president and says nice things about Scott Walker, can you see Walker thinking about going to Washington?
He said he wouldn't seek out a seat in the cabinet.
Seek out.
But it's different when, or he's not interested in one either. I think he changed language too, if I'm not interested. But it's different when a president asks or says, I need you. Would that change his mind? Maybe. Maybe he sends a signal right away, I'm not interested, don't even ask. But when you're asked, that's tough to say no. So it might be a tougher decision for Scott Walker if, big if, one, a Republican wins, and two, he or she says, I need you in my cabinet.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating 2016.
Absolutely.
It will. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's the last Rewind of the year. Look for us in January. Thank you.
Thank you.